Make sure you like, comment, share, and subscribe below for more ghoulish tales. Welcome back, everybody, to the Dark Forest. Tonight, I got goosebumps now, sitting around the campfire, getting ready to tell some spooky tales with us tonight. Grab your s'mores and your brews, and a burger too while you're at it. The ice chest is right there to your left. Don't be shy. Now, let's get spooky. I live in Western Canada, kinda near Vancouver, but a little more woodsy, to say the least. Never been much of a city folk myself, but I work in the city, but where I live, it's more country-like, kinda like a small town, but I like it that way. I've been here all my life. I've taken vacations to the United States and other parts of Alaska, but Canada is home. Yes. We have some very harsh winters, beautiful summers, amazing springs, and fall, well, fall's just like anywhere else. This happened a year ago in springtime of 2019, but it feels like yesterday, and it still haunts my dreams. It was the beginning of spring break. I currently attend the University of British Columbia. Might I add, this is 100% true. I don't care what anyone says. I remember it was a Saturday morning. My classmate and best friend Luke and I wanted to go on a great hike. We did some research and found out this great area north of town. It was called Lower Seymour Conservation Reserve. It was breathtaking, to say the least, online when we looked it up, and we knew that we had to spend the day there hiking. After arriving and parking our car on Lillooet Road, we hopped on the Seymour Valley Trail heading north. We had our backpacks full of snacks and trail mixes and waters, of course. We were really having a great time just talking and laughing about school stuff and girls and whatever else we were talking about at the time. I remember it was a bright and sunny day that morning, yet as soon as we arrived to this area, it got gloomy. Fast. Even though it was only the afternoon, it felt like it was already in the evening how dark the clouds were above us. Were those rain clouds? They sure were dark. Luckily, I had a light sweater on. So did Luke. But nothing heavy if it was to rain. If it started to rain, we would have to hightail it back to the parking lot. Man. This place was so gorgeous. It was so green. And the hiking trails weren't that steep. Yes, I'm a little overweight, so I don't want anything too hardcore, if you know what I mean. This place was gorgeous. Breathtaking. I don't know where the time went. I don't believe we were hiking that long, but it was already getting dark. I know we were kind of messing around hiking and taking plenty of breaks along the way, just shooting the shit and having snacks, but it was utterly like sunset already. It was already getting dark. I guess that's what happens when you're having fun, right? You lose track of time. I mean, that's what we assumed it to be. We noticed to our left, there was a turnoff. Do we continue to go straight? Or go off track and head left? We decided to take that left, just to see where it would take us. Eventually going down that trail, we noticed that there was this huge lake. There was a wooden sign that said, Rice Lake, in front of us. Sweet, I said. Luke made a joke. I wonder if they'll have some chow mein over there too. Ha ha ha, very funny. That's probably not even the reason why they call it Rice Lake, I replied. They may have not had chow mein, but we may have been chow mein for something else. When we started to approach the lake, we noticed that there was something hunched over near the edge of the waterline. Something big. Something unworldly. We both stopped in our tracks.
Dude, what the hell is that?
Luke looked puzzled.
I think it's a wolf or something, he replied.
Whatever it was devouring something. We couldn't tell. As I said before, it was starting to get dark, and this thing was black as midnight itself, which didn't help at all for our vision to see what the hell was going on. As our eyes started to adjust to the darkness, we noticed that this was no normal wolf, nor coyote. No, it was too small to be a coyote. Plus, that's more of an American thing. We're in Canada. We get the real beasts. All of a sudden, the beast stops devouring whatever the hell it was eating, and we could hear it breathing. Heavily. Its breathing had bass in it, like some subwoofers in the back seat of a Honda hatchback. We just stood there stunned. Then, this thing uses its front paws. No, let me rephrase that. Claws. And it rips whatever it was eating and tosses some pieces behind it like some unwanted section it didn't like. Since when did wolves become picky eaters? The moon was bright. So incredibly bright that night. We could see the reflection of the full moon against the top of the waterbed. The beast slowly turns its head sideways towards our direction. We could see the illumination from the moonlight gleaming in his eyes. Or was his eyes glowing? God. God help us either way. Did it see us? I mean, we were just standing there on the trail. We weren't close by, but still. We were in plain sight if this thing was nocturnal in any ways. I leaned over to my buddy Luke and whispered to him.
We need to get the hell out of here. Quietly.
He nodded his head without saying a word. We slowly started to backtrack on the trail. Backwards, of course. There was no way I was taking my eyes off of this thing until I felt more comfortable.
What the hell was it?
As we were slowly walking backwards back to the tee on the trail, this thing hopped on its back hind legs, lifted its head up to the sky, and let out a horrific howl. A howl that I've never heard before. This beast was at least 7 feet tall, scrawny, but pure muscle. It had black fur, and its eyes, I swear to you, its eyes were still glowing. As soon as we made a right-hand turn at that tee, we both hightailed it back to the parking lot where our truck was. I am so grateful that that thing didn't chase us. I don't know if it was warning us with the howl, or if it just truly didn't know that our presence was there. Either which way, we never went back there to hike again. My wife and I flew out to Orlando, Florida for her master's degree in psychology's graduation. It was a beautiful ceremony. She met up with a couple of her classmates that she had been friends with online for her university. We drove around sightseeing, ate at plenty of different seafood Cajun restaurants. I mean, they had great restaurants everywhere, especially El Pollo Tropical, which is like a drive-thru place. It was fantastic. I'm obsessed with the black beans and rice. Fast forward a couple days. I have family down in Okeechobee, Florida, which is a small little fisherman's town at the north tip of the lake. It was about a 2-hour and 15-minute drive, and we decided to avoid the tolls as we didn't pay for it with our rental, and we took the back roads down there. The drive was
beautiful. It was green in every direction that you would look. Now it's springtime, so everything was just out and about. Except for the gators. We never did see any gators. I guess they don't like the cold weather. Yes, Florida does have chilly weather. Just wait until summertime, then you're screwed. We were told that there was a crazy cold front that usually happens around this time of year, so it kind of throws everything off with the wildlife. If you live in Florida, or have ever visited before, you know how wet and flat the state is. The swamps. The swamps are everywhere. You have to watch your step if you're outside, or else you might lose your foot. I swear, I avoid any contact with any type of water as much as possible out there. You just never know what creepy crawlies or giant alligators are around. Especially for a tourist. And especially hearing about that thing about the kid that got snatched up by an alligator at Disney World. Yeah, it's best to just keep on your guard if you're just touristing. So we were visiting some family. And in their backyard, there's a canal that leads to Lake Okeechobee from their backyard where they have a little boathouse, if you say. It's kind of like a little mini dock in your backyard where you could fit a small boat. It's pretty awesome, actually. So, a few beers later and a couple shots of vodka, my stepdad and I were fishing off of the back dock. Just shooting the shit and talking and catching up on old times and memories and stuff like that. My wife was behind us, sitting in the chair, taking pictures of this huge giant pelican-like bird that was just hanging out near us. It was trippy because my stepdad, I guess, feeds it when he's fishing because the birds just had no fear of him at all. And he named him Harry. He just stood there waiting to be fed. The turtles kept trying to take our bait. It was starting to annoy us. It was quiet at the swamps that night, which is pretty unusual. It was cold that night, which is very unusual. The day before, the humidity was just scorching. My stepdad went inside because he had to take a leak. I stood there with my fishing pole just chilling, sipping on my Corona beer. All of a sudden, this huge pelican-like bird, Harry, just flips out and flies away from us, screaming at the top of its bird lungs. Something startled the hell out of it. And at the exact same time, his dog Bella, which is this huge, fat, silverish Weimaraner dog, is barking at the top of her lungs at the fence in the backyard just behind us. I stood up from my lawn chair and looked around.
What is it, girl? What's going on? What do you see?
Now at this point, it's pretty pitch black out. He has this small little searchlight-like light that's hanging off the edge of the back wooden dock where we were fishing. I don't know why, but I suddenly had the creeps. Almost like I felt like I was being watched. I turned around to my wife and she just stood there in confusion like, "What's wrong?"
"I don't hear anything. Why did that bird just freak out like that? And why is Bella barking at nothing?"
I responded. She shrugged and just said that she was going to go inside. "Oh, great. She's just going to leave me out here to fish and clean up by myself? Thanks, hon," I said to her as she walked up the hill.
"Well, now I know why man invented beer," I shrugged as I took a swig of my Corona. But still, something was bothering me. I grabbed a little mini flashlight, spotlight thing, whatever you want to call it, and I was shining it on the water. It was smooth. There was no motion on the water whatsoever. I motioned the searchlight to my left, and I saw nothing. Just neighbors with their boats and their little docks. Nothing spectacular, nothing out of the ordinary. I shined it across the water in front of me at the neighbor across the way. Same thing. Nothing. It's when I shined it to my right at the edge of the canal. The area where it stops, where the road crosses to the next neighboring street across the way. At the end of the canal,
there was this huge French-like drain, circular metal thing that connected the water to go underneath the ground. It must have led to somewhere across the street on the other side. It was almost like a man-made cave made out of steel. And of course, the road was above it. So the water from the canal just went right in. I guess that was to prevent any floods. So the water for the current from any rain or storm would have somewhere to take it to, preventing it from piling up and getting too high to flood people's backyards. When I shined my light in that direction, though, the lake water wasn't the only thing that was inside that large metal tubing in the road. There was something crawling out from it, heading up the hill towards my direction. I almost dropped the light in fright. This thing was crawling on all fours. It had shaggy black fur. Its face looked like a dog. A very large dog. But its body shape was more like a man. It didn't have a tail from what I remembered. At this point, I was already running back to the back porch anyways. I screamed for my stepdad and my wife. They ran to the door as I was running up there babbling, trying to explain to him what I had seen. My dad urged me to come inside and he locked the door and sat me down. He handed me a cloth as I wiped the sweat off of my forehead and face. I was mumbling like a baby, shaken and at a loss for words. I took a shot of vodka and a swig of another beer, since I left mine outside, and I started to relax my breathing and calm down. I explained everything to him. I told him every little detail that I could remember when I shined the light in that direction by that... at that thing. Whatever it was. My stepdad just sat down next to me. He put his hand on my shoulder and he just laid it out on me. He told me that this isn't the first time that anyone has reported instances like this in his town. Now, there's only about 5,000 plus people in this actual small town, but the county of Okeechobee has a lot more. There have been several sightings, and animals have been reported missing within the past couple of months. He said that the local legends talk about a furry man dog beast, better known as a dog man, is bounded somehow to this area. He told me that he did some research on it as he's seen it himself. Down at the public library, sightings of this dogman creature have dated back to the 1940s. Even a child went missing once. He said usually the reports are coming from local hunters, but like I said, he's seen it for himself. Grab your guns and grab your knives, because the dog man hunts at night.
So I've been dating this girl now for about 2 months.
We have gone out quite a few times, be it for coffee, dinner, or a movie.
This morning she texted me and asked me if I wanted to spend our month anniversary out camping. Her name was Brittany, and she was extremely into the outdoor lifestyle. How could I say no at this point? This would be the first time since I've met her that we'd be sleeping together in the same vicinity. Well, that, and she also kind of thinks I'm a huge fan of camping. But that's my fault, because we met in an outdoorsy type store. When I bumped into Brittany, I was bewildered by her beautiful face. She had a radiant personality that just drew me right in. Now, I know what you're thinking. If you're not into the wilderness lifestyle, why were you at the outdoor store? I was there in search of a BB gun. There's a group of trash pandas that come by my house nightly and try to raid my garbage can. I was attempting to take the humane way out. I didn't want to kill them, I just wanted to make sure they knew they weren't welcome. So that brings us back to our main predicament here. I hate camping, but I really like my girlfriend, and I would really like to get laid. So with a plastered on smile, I agreed to rough it outdoors. We decided to make a long weekend out of our getaway. With our bags filled to the brim with survival equipment, we grabbed the rest of the stuff we needed out of Brittany's garage and placed it in her Jeep. We left early Friday morning and drove all the way up to the Appalachia. We arrived in the early afternoon. From where we parked the Jeep, it was a 45-minute trek up to the camping site. Our destination was Wolf's Peak. I was a little creeped out as we hiked up the trail, and every now and again you would see slash marks in the trees. They seemed extremely unnatural. As bothering as they were, I couldn't let Brittany know that I was rattled by this, or else I could ruin my chances of getting lucky tonight. We reached our destination by high noon. We started unpacking and setting up camp, and it was my job to put the tent together. As I wrestled with it, since I'm not very great with this kind of stuff, Brittany headed off to get us water from a stream nearby. As I wrestled with the damn thing, all of a sudden the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I got a cold feeling in my gut. It felt like I was being watched. I stopped and scanned the surrounding area for any kind of movement or life. I saw nothing. That uneasy feeling I had gotten while pitching the tent never truly went away. Even after I had finished, I just couldn't shake the feeling that there was something that didn't want us here. After wrestling with this damn thing for 30 minutes, I finally got it to stand. I began to lay out the sleeping bags inside the tent. As I went to exit, I noticed a shadow standing outside. I rushed out to see what it was. There was nobody. I started to circle the tent just to make sure I wasn't imagining things, when suddenly I felt a strong force from behind me. Two hands forced me to the ground with a rough shove. I quickly spun around after hitting the ground to see who had shoved me. I abruptly let out a scream. A tall man in a hockey mask leered over me, holding a machete in his right hand. He raised the hand with the machete above his head. I closed my eyes and put my hand over my face in fear, and I waited for it to swing down on me and end my life. After a few seconds went by, I could hear laughter. Female laughter. What the hell? The imposter Jason laughed as it dropped its machete and ripped not one but two masks off. Underneath was the ever-growing grin of my girlfriend. After a bit of poking and teasing, she reminded me we were up in the mountains, not down by a lakeside. Brittany claimed the scariest thing up here was maybe a pack of wolves, hence the name of the campsite, Wolf's Peak. After Brittany's little scare tactic, we decided we'd go looking for fallen branches so we could have a nice fire for tonight. As we combed the brush for acceptable pieces of wood, we came upon the mouth of a cave. It had a few signs hung in the entrance that were quite alarming. Stay out, or else. Enter and you will die. Brittany's eyes lit up. I gave her a stern, long face and said, no. Brittany smirked and rolled her eyes and said, you're just a big fat chicken then. After which she dropped her wood, put her arms to her sides, and started making fun of me like she was a chicken, clucking and all. After about 20 seconds of her tirade, I dropped my wood too, but not because she was annoying me. No, this is because I had locked eyes with something in the cave. I was transfixed in the gaze of two yellow floating orbs in the back of the cave. Brittany soon stopped after she caught a glimpse of what I was staring at. After hearing a light growl, we both slowly backed away from the cave entrance, leaving the wood we had gathered. We locked hands and calmly and quickly left the area. As we sped walked away, I shot a slight jab at her. Wolf's Peak, huh? She slowly shook her head as we kept walking. On our way back to the campsite, we slowly picked up firewood, as we kept an eye behind us, making sure whatever we saw hadn't followed us back. Soon enough, it was nightfall. We had a good old-fashioned fire cooking. We roasted hot dogs. What we had seen earlier, though, kind of really killed the mood of this whole trip. Then I got an idea. Maybe we should fight fire with fire. Or in this case, fear with fear. Maybe some good old-fashioned ghost stories around the fire would take our minds off of things. I started first. I told her the tale of a headless ghost who was doomed to roam a house bound by the sea. Brittany soon got into the spirit of things and took her turn telling me a tale about an evil pop-up amusement park. My next tale was about an evil doll who came to life after a certain set of words were read to it in a certain order. And when it came back to Brittany, she told me the tale of the Dog Man. The story hit a little too close to home when she ended it by saying it was a local legend. Immediately, I thought back to the entrance of the cave. Afterwards, we put out our fire and decided it was time for bed. The events after that transpired were exactly what I had hoped they would be. Maybe camping didn't suck so bad after all. After our extraneous activities, both of us fell asleep pretty quickly. I kept having the same nightmare where I was back in front of the entrance of that cave. After something charged out of the cave mouth at me, I woke up in a cold sweat. I looked over and Brittany was gone. I exited the tent. After a quick sweep around the campsite, I realized I was completely alone. I rushed back to the tent and grabbed my cell phone. I dialed Brittany's number frantically. I heard it. It was ringing, and it didn't sound far from me. I slowly followed the sound. It was laying behind a tree about 20 feet away from our tent. As I leaned down to pick it up, I heard a voice from behind me. A stern, "Hey!" As I turned around, I was met with something coming at my face extremely fast. I felt a sharp pain as something whacked me in the face, and I started to black out as I slumped over. As I drifted out of consciousness, I felt somebody wrap their arms around my legs and start dragging me. When I awoke later, there was a cool sensation against my back. It felt like stone. I went to rub my face where I was hit, and my movement was restricted by a loud clanging chain. And immediately after I rattled that metal to my bondage, I heard a loud roar. I tensed up and started to squint, trying to adjust my eyes to the darkness that surrounded me. I was able to make out two dark figures. There was one more dire detail I could make out, even in my haze. There were two glowing amber orbs across the room. With a few shaky breaths, I let out the, "Who's there?" The sound of footsteps approached me, along with a shrill cackle. That laugh. I know that laugh. Brittany. I gathered up some courage and raised my voice. "Just what the hell do you think you're doing, Brittany?" After approaching me, she got face to face with me as she kneeled down. She growled in a sinister voice, "I'm taking care of my boyfriend." I snapped back angrily, "This is a fine way to take care of somebody." She coldly replied, "I never said you." She then got up and walked away from me. She then mentioned that the story she had told by the fire, the last one, about the dog bin, wasn't necessarily not true. I replied with a shocked, "What?" Brittany replied with a sharp tone, "Listen closely, I'm only going to say this once. A few years ago, me and my boyfriend were camping in these very woods. He was attacked by a wolf-like creature. He got a few good shots in on it. As the creature ran away, it fell down and died. Once the creature had slipped away from this world, all its fur had fallen off to reveal a man. A few hours after he was attacked, my boyfriend started to transform. And as for the beast that's chained up across from you, that's what he became." Brittany vanished into the darkness, near where the eyes were glowing. Moments later, I heard a metallic clank. The amber orbs moved towards me as the sound of movement started to pick up in the cave. Suddenly, they vanished and reappeared right in front of my face seconds later, followed by a loud roar right in my face. I felt the dog man sink his fangs into my jugular, and my body began to start to feel cold after a while as he gnawed on my flesh. If I could tell anybody one last thing, it would be, fear the dog man. I come from a small town in Florida. We're not known for much. Well, except maybe our swamp. Over the years, the locals have nicknamed this place Pantano de Hombre Lobo, which more or less translates to Swamp of the Werewolf. So yeah, essentially, I come from a town that's famous for its swamp, which is rumored to be home to werewolves. Now, growing up, I never believed this. That was until me and my friends went and ventured into the swamp around the age of 15. It was many years ago when my two best friends and I decided to take an adventure into Pantano de Hombre Lobo. What started out as a dare would be the night that changed our lives forever. One night, my two best friends and I, that go by the name of Chris and Miguel, we were all hanging out in Chris's garage. It was around 9 p.m. on a Saturday night. We were stupid teens who were bored and looking for something to do. After we spent about a half an hour roasting each other, Miguel got the great idea we should go do something crazy. To add some context to this, it was summer vacation, so we started brainstorming. What could we do that was crazy? I suggested ding-dong ditching. Miguel suggested we go smash some mailboxes. But Chris had a much more crazy idea than either of those combined. "Let's go into the swamp," he said. Both me and Miguel looked at him with a serious manner. The devilish grins we had about doing something diabolical just a moment ago had faded away. "But Chris, you know what's supposed to be out there," I said, panicked. Miguel agreed with me. He said his folks didn't set many rules, but going into the swamp was definitely one of them. Chris rolled his eyes and said, "You're both just chicken." Chris squinted and scoffed at us. "Do you both really think there's werewolves living in the swamp? It's not an ideal terrain for a wolf." I quickly protested. "Okay, so what about all the howling we used to hear back when we were kids?" Chris fired back with, "Local teens, much like ourselves, keeping the legend alive, having a good time, fucking with kids." Miguel and I were still very hesitant to go into the swamp with Chris. Chris gave us a few seconds to think about it, then stood up and shrugged and said, "Well, I'm going either way without you pussies." Chris armed himself with a baseball bat, slumped it over his shoulder, and proceeded down the driveway. Me and Miguel, both more worried about Chris than our own safety at this point, decided to follow him. I felt like Chris was out to prove something. Regardless, friends stick together, so me and Miguel followed behind. There were a few off-beaten paths known to lead to
Pantano de Hombre Lobo.
But no one in town dared venture into those paths because they were afraid of what they might come across. In the span of a half an hour, we had walked all the way from Chris's garage to the first known path of the swamp. You could have chalked it up to residual nerves, or the fact that the swamp just let off a very unforeboding feeling. Regardless, I knew I was spooked. Chris held his bat out and started swinging it to knock down vines as we entered the small pathway. The air was lousy with the music of nature. Frogs croaking, fish splashing, you could hear crickets chirping, and the sound of the swamp goop bubbling. My number one fears were what my parents had told me as a child. There was a family, I was forced into the swamp by the townsfolk. The Gonzalez family never owned a dog, yet multiple reports of howling could be heard on every single full moon coming from their house. Eventually, people started reporting seeing wolf-like figures in their backyards. The problem only got worse as people's livestock and pets started to be slaughtered. Family was accused of being werewolves, and one night, the townsfolk rose up during a full moon. They burned down their house and chased the family into the swamp. And since then, if you listen closely in the night of a full moon, you can hear the howling of a wolf coming from the swamp. And due to the legends, no one in town dares set a foot in
Pantano de Hombre Lobo.
Yet here, us three stupid kids were barging right in. We spent 45 cautious minutes dredging through the swamp, walking over the muddy paths. I couldn't tell you if I was more scared of running into a gator or the actual werewolves. Regardless, Chris was getting bored of this. He swung his bat against a tree. Angrily, Chris proclaimed, "This legend's bull. Somebody probably came in here and drowned when they were drunk, and that's why they marked this place as unsafe. And that's probably where they came up with this stupid legend as well." Mockingly, Chris cupped his hands against his mouth and made a wolf sound.
Oh!
Immediately after, we heard the response of another howl. Immediately, all three of our eyes widened in shock, and we mouthed to each other, "What the fuck?" Moments later, all the natural sounds died. The frogs stopped croaking, the crickets stopped singing. A feeling of dread rose as the wind picked up. Miguel grabbed my shoulder and said, "We need to get the fuck out of here."
As quietly as we could, we started heading back the way we came.
The only issue is we were about an hour into this trek. As we picked up the pace, it was about 15 minutes after we had left the spot where Chris had done the initial howl, we heard movement in front of us. Something was creeping around in the brush in front of us. We froze in the line we were walking. Chris cupped his hands and made another wolfly howl.
Oh!
I glared at him and said, "Dude, what the hell?" He poked me with the bat and said, "Dude, shut up, relax. I'm trying to track it." Surely enough, like clockwork, we heard another howl echo in the distance. Nervously, I blurted out loud, "That sounds a lot closer than the last one had." But it didn't come from in front of us, and that's where the main relief came from. We kept pressing forward. The bushes shook in front of us once more as an angry goose popped out. This was enough to send Miguel over the edge as he freaked out. He bolted ahead of us, screaming in fear. Chris panicked and did another howl, hoping to track the wolf once more. I looked at Chris with panicked, wide eyes and said, "Dude, this is really fucking bad." We picked up the pace and started running full speed, trying to catch up to Miguel. Moments later, we heard a scream. And after jumping through a bush, we leapt over a small stretch of water. We found Miguel sitting on his ass, cowering, with this gigantic creature standing in front of him. Its eyes glowed crimson red under the light of the full moon. Miguel and this thing were locked in a staring match as Miguel held his arm. I could see blood. It took the thing a few seconds to notice me and Chris. But when it finally broke the trance between the staring contest it and Miguel were having, it let out a powerful roar. "Holy fuck!" Chris screamed as he held up the baseball bat in a defensive manner. The werewolf slung down its powerful claws and slashed right through the bat. In a split-second response, Chris alternated attacks to a crotch kick. The creature went down, and I grabbed Miguel and pulled him up over my shoulder. We started hauling ass through the swamp. I never stopped running once. It had to be the adrenaline kicking in. Just as we came up on the exit of the swamp, we heard another deafening roar. The werewolf had leaped out and sideswiped Chris. I glanced back while running, and I could see the creature had fully pinned down Chris. He shouted in pain, "Keep going!" Miguel and I reached the exit, and I set him down on the street. I started to head back towards the swamp, and Miguel stopped me and said, "What do you think you're even going to do?" I shook my head as I looked down and said, "I don't know." And I jogged back into the swamp. As I re-entered the swamp, I could see multiple figures crowded around the area Chris had gone down. I was smart enough to know that those weren't human. I backed away slowly and made my exit from
Pantano de Hombre Lobo.
I helped Miguel back up and we hobbled to my house where we had contacted his parents. After we got him medical assistance, we contacted Chris's family. The police were called, but all refused to search the swamp. They declared Chris a missing persons case. Since then, his family's moved away. To this day, I still refuse to go near the swamp. Although I've noticed, if you listen closely on the night of a full moon, you can hear faint howling coming from
Pantano de Hombre Lobo.